The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is I Should Be Writing Season 18, Episode 34, and we're talking about rejectomancy again.
But I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting.
Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. I stream Tuesday, Thursday, 3 p.m. on twitch.tv/mightymer. That's 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And I talk about all the stuff when you start writing that slows you down and makes you want to quit, because we've all gone through it. Trust me. I've been doing this podcast since 2005 when I had not sold anything, and now I'm working on my eighth book, I think. Seventh book's coming out this fall, and the career's been good, so this show chronicles it for better or for worse. And I talked to beginnings. It used to be for wannabe writers by a wannabe writer, and then my audience wouldn't let me call myself a wannabe writer anymore after I started actually selling. So, anyway, we start out with talking about how things are going with personal projects, and today I haven't written yet because I set my laptop off to laptop camp today. It was sad, but I had to have a battery problem with my Mac, and it was one of those things that I knew it was coming. I just had to wait for it to get bad enough for Apple to care about it and use AppleCare, which is not even a pun, just sounds like a sad attempt to be clever with words and failed. But Apple cared, and AppleCare is covering it because AppleCare runs out in a couple of months. So needed to get that done, and it needs to be sent off. So I figured, well, I've got a PC, I can keep going. But my day was basically getting the computer ready for that and then sending it off. I would like to say again, I just did an episode on backups recently, but seriously, guys, back up all the time. I do two backups to the cloud and one backup to an external hard drive, and I have a couple of programs that automatically back up to different things, like Scrivener backs up to Dropbox automatically. And this is one of those set it and forget it kind of things. Somewhere along the way, I deleted Google Drive from my computer, the actual desktop app, and so I was no longer backing up my computer to Google. So fix that today, and I use Backblaze, I use Google One or Google Drive, or I don't know what specifically Google thing, and then I have a backup drive. These are all pretty inexpensive, like $3 a month or so, and it's really easy to set up. I am not endorsed by anybody. I'm just telling you what I use. Please back your stuff up. There's my public service announcement. I did get 2,000 words yesterday, and it's neat. The antagonists are starting to show themselves, or at least the protagonists are starting to figure out who the antagonists are, and so action's picking up, and people are getting upset and separated, and there's violence, and it's been a lot more fun to write. So that's good. I'm hoping to get some done after this, but I don't know who I'm kidding, because it's hot in here, I'm frustrated from earlier problems of the day, and I'm usually tired after streaming, so just turning off these hot lights, turning on the fan, and starting to get to work here at the computer does not feel likely. I don't know. Now it's time for good news, and I'm not sure I have much. I have little to complain about. The dog is still in a cone. Apparently, she was talked about this morning during rounds at the veterinary place, so we're gonna be talking to the doctors about what to do soon. She's doing better, though. Like, yesterday she had a good couple hours outside of the cone. Granted, she was snoozing for a lot of that time, but, you know, when it was bad, it was like, you take her out of the cone and immediately she goes for the toe. So now it's not as imminent. Imminent? Sure. But, yeah, riding's happening, dog's doing okay. Shauna's got good news. My good news is my work meeting went way better than anticipated. Now I just have to write up notes and feeling much relieved. That's great. I believe Daniel told us... Oh, one rejection to the counter. I missed that. Thank you. We are adding a rejection to the counter. Congratulations on your rejection, Daniel. Well done. Good for you. And Christian Writing has two new rejections. So, congratulations on that. Gotta wait for the... Alright, well done, Christian Writing. If you're new here, would like to say that we celebrate rejections because rejection shows that you are a working writer. It's part of the job, and we might as well celebrate it because working writers get rejected. So, you get rejected, you're a working writer. You're just not getting paid yet. That's the next step. But for now, rejection's not easy. And so the fact that you're doing it and you continue to do it is great. So well done, everybody. And here is one for Under Pope. Congratulations on your rejection, sir. Well done. So yeah, that's it for good news. If anybody else has good news you want to share, let me know. If you have good news and you're listening to this podcast later, then email me and put good news in the subject line and we'll get to it the next episode. This is mostly for people listening live, because I think by the time I get this into the feed, it'll be next week. But we are doing the Spoilers Club this Saturday for Lily Lanoff's One for All, and I'm doing a giveaway on that night. So if you want to email me with giveaway in the subject line, I will get. We'll do a giveaway that night, and we will. Lily has said she will sign a book plate and send it to you, so you can kind of have a signed book. Premi has good news you cannot share yet. Premi, that is not to be prefaced by a wah. That's excellent news. You can keep that secret as long as you have to. You still get the yay button. That's all good. That's good. That's good. We cheer for news we can't say. Because news we can't say is a big part of this job as well. It's a weird, weird thing that, like, I've talked about it before. You can get excitement fatigue. Like, sometimes when something is signed and it's very exciting for you, but you can't tell anybody. And then months or literally years later, when it comes out and everybody else is excited, and you're not jumping up and down, they wonder what's wrong with you. And you're like, well, I was excited 18 months ago. I didn't get to announce a movie option deal until 18 months had passed and they renewed it. So I just had to sit on that information. It's frustrating. But yeah, if you're excited about something secret now, we are here to celebrate with you. We will hit the yay button. We will say yay, and we won't know what we're talking about, but we are happy if you're happy. That is it for good news. Again, if you want to give me more good news, feel free to email me. That's mightymur@gmail.com. So, we're talking about rejectomancy again. I was talking to somebody on the Discord and doing a little bit of rejectomancy, and I realized it's always good to go through, because even after we talk about rejectomancy, people end up thinking, yeah, but what did my rejection mean? Even if it had a lot of the same elements, what exactly did it mean? Rejectomancy is It is the magic we do when we're looking at a rejection letter to try to figure out what it means, if anything. And I am a writer, and I'm also a short fiction editor, along with The Kids Are Asleep and Preemie Soros. We all, three of us work on Escape Pod. And so I have been on the receiving end of rejections, and I've been on the giving end of rejections, and I can tell you both. We're having a thunderstorm. Just letting you know. Last time I said something probably won't happen related to the weather, it totally did happen, and we had to run to the basement. So, with Rejectomancy, the problem is, from an editor's point of view, there's a lot of stories that come through. A lot. And oftentimes, what we look for the first thing is, did you follow the submission guidelines? Every magazine is going to have specific things they want you to do. Sometimes they want you to be to anonymize it so that they won't have try to do any favoritism. Sometimes they want you to submit it with a certain kind of format. Not as important in the digital age, but say some of us like to take the slush and send it to e-readers. And so if your stuff can't be easily transformed into e-reading material, that's going to annoy us. I'm not sure how much standard manuscript format means anymore. Courier was chosen as the standard font because every letter and every piece of punctuation took up the exact same amount of space. So you could know how many characters can go on a page, and so you could look at a page and say, well, that's got X number of words, usually 250 words, and make an assumption of how long the story is based on that. So 7-page story, 250 words per page. I'm not going to do the math because I'm live on stream and I'm going to do it wrong if I try. But now that we're all on word processors that do the counting for us, the font doesn't matter that much, and a lot of editors want something that's, well, more pleasant to read than Courier. So a lot of times people will be rejected just by not following submission guidelines. And as an author, I know it's annoying. If you write a story and you format it for one editor and then they reject it and then you go to the next publication and they want you to submit it in a different way. It's frustrating. I know. When I did my very first agent hunt, very, very long time ago, I remember being so angry that some of the agents wanted 50 pages of a novel. Some wanted the first two chapters or the first three chapters. Some wanted a 1-page outline. Some wanted a 2-page outline, which felt like an awful lot of work to get absolutely nothing. And I didn't get an agent from that attempt either. Yeah, it can be frustrating. But if you follow that, then you're already ahead of other people. So, after that, they may say something like, it's not right for our magazine. And that kind of feels like, it feels like it's not you, it's me kind of thing. But even if there's a magazine that calls itself Fantasy and Science Fiction, or Escape Pod, which is a science fiction magazine, you know, you can try to do sci-fi horror, example. And we may not want it because we don't do horror. And unfortunately, Pseudopod may not want it because they don't do sci-fi. So that's the problem with cross-genre. You will be better off going to fantasy and science fiction, for example, with cross-genre stuff, or one of the other magazines. But again, to the submission guidelines, editors are going to say what they don't want. Some don't want hardcore gore. Some don't want sexual violence. Some don't want, like, violence against children. Some don't want violence against animals. Some don't want... I remember the very first time I read this, I thought it was so funny and specific, and then I realized why they did it, which is no stories about vampires or werewolves being private detectives. Apparently, they'd seen too many of those. So if your story is not right for the magazine, we sometimes have to say that in an escape pod. We can get the best story in the world, but if it's not what we're trying to publish in escape pod, we're going to turn it down. And we've had to turn down great stories before, but it's not what we want people to anticipate when they come to get an escape pod story. Yeah, Preemie says, there was a wonderful thriller story in Slush the other day. I regretfully wrote back to be like, this was very good, but you gotta submit sci-fi to a sci-fi podcast, my friend. Yes. Yeah, so that's a big thing. If you, your story could be the best thing, but not fitting for them. Another thing, and this is the ugly truth. I'm going into the ugly truth now. It's possible they just bought a story very similar. Or they bought two stories that were very similar. And don't want to tell you, maybe you don't want to wait like 18 months for us to take this out, because we're not going to put three of those stories close to each other in the schedule. The one thing I really hate is when we can't afford a story. You know, we pay by... You know, we pay by the word. And so, frankly, if you're writing a 4,000-word story, you've got a better chance against an equally high-quality 6,000-word story. We're going to choose the 4, because that gives us 2,000 more words to spend on another week. So when people send us really long original stories, and I'm not even saying really long, like, outside our word count limit, but... when you send us the really long stories, you know, they got to be even better when they get up to being that expensive. And sometimes we're near the end of our budgetary period and we're just like, we can afford one original story right now. Which one of these 5 that you love are we going to take? And these are hard. And we had one guy query us to say, hey, I was wondering if you could, you know, bend on your word count limit, because I've just written my very first story and it's 6,300 words. And I said, well, we don't, but maybe you could trim some words and submit it. And he wrote back and said, no, that's the length that needs to be. I can't trim anything. And I'm like, good luck with that. You can almost always trim. And it almost always makes the story tighter and reads better. Stephen Barnes told me that he had he was required to reduce a book size by 10%. And so he actually went through and took 10% of words off of every page. So instead of like trying to take big hunks elsewhere and... his editor had said it was his best, most tightly plotted book. When an editor says they want to see your stuff, they want to see your next thing, they mean it? Really, sometimes it guts us to reject somebody, and we really do want to see the next thing they write. So don't question that. Now, something interesting that came up in talking to the person in the Discord was about social media, which after yesterday, if you're listening to this later, yesterday it was announced that Elon Musk was buying Twitter and he wants to make it into a free speech zone, which, as we understand, kind of means that it's okay to say the N-word now. It's not. So someone had said that they'd submitted a story. Then the editor followed them on social media. No, the magazine followed them on social media. And they'd sort of seen it as a good sign, and then they got rejected. And I sympathized, but I thought, okay, I'll tell you what happens, at least from us, about social media. First, and this is kind of sad, might be bad information, or bad news, but at least at Escape Artists, the editors don't run the social media. Actually, I'm not sure if it's a secret who runs our social media or not. But anyway, I can tell you it's not me and Valerie. So if a magazine follows you, you don't even know if the editor's reading your stuff. On the other hand, the editors almost always have personal accounts, and so they may follow you. But regardless, if you're followed by the magazine or the editors, it means that pretty much you're being seen as a writer, and they want to see more of you. And does that mean they're going to buy your next story? No. But does it mean that you are in their mindset of, who are the new writers coming up? I'm going to follow this person and see what they're up to. It's a lot like networking. You know, networking is like throwing pennies into a jar. Not one, well, drops of water. Drops of water is better. Drops of water into a bucket, where one of them is not going to make a huge difference. But as you keep doing it, you will create much larger volume and make a bigger difference. So if someone follows you on social media, that one thing doesn't mean anything, but now you're on the radar. And you could be saying something funny and insightful, and they could contact you and say, that's interesting, tell me more, or could you write a book about that? Or you'd think it doesn't happen, but it does. Which is another reason why, and I'm sorry, introverts, that networking and social media are important. And sometimes it's social media following has been happening for a very long time now, and people still don't quite know what it means. Some people hate follow. Neil Gaiman followed me on Twitter in like 2008 or 9, and I was shocked, very shocked. And even now, I think he only follows about 1,000 people. But the thing is, I don't think he's ever responded to me unless I've asked him something specific. And one time it was, you can look that stuff up online. And that was the point when I realized that sometimes people ask questions in order to actually start a conversation, not necessarily to need the answer. So it's like, if I ask Google this question, Google will tell me a flat answer. If I ask Neil Gaiman the question, then we might have a talk about it, and that would be interesting. So the whole, let me Google that for you, it feels like a snarky and funny response, but I realized at that moment that I really just wanted to talk to Neil Gaiman about Douglas Adams and the price of beer when he wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And instead, Neil told me to look it up on wherever you can find out how much things cost. So yeah, social media, it's sometimes it means you're on someone's radar, and sometimes it just means, I don't know. I really don't know. It was a whim or something. I had I've gone through a career mentioning every up and down on Twitter, and then I mentioned, without naming anybody, something very annoying that I'd found very personally offensive that happened at my place of work in 1998. And that's when I found out that the person who did that to me follows me on Twitter. And he had not responded to anything I tweeted at all until I brought up what happened between us without naming names. I was pissed. Oh, and he gave me the non-pology. I'm sorry it seemed that way to you. Oh, it was great. Oh, so good. I am way off topic here. I'm sorry. I guess the really big thing is we try to see the meaning in everything. And sometimes the meaning is that person said something interesting. I'm going to follow them on Twitter and read what they have to say and probably never reply. Or here's a person from my past. I'll follow them and see what happens. If they ever say anything that interests me at all, which apparently I didn't. The worst part, the worst thing, and I try to be very self-aware. I was going to say that. But editors are people. If you've ever spoken at someone in anger because of something someone else did, or you've ever yelled at your dog for whining for dinner at the right time after you've had a fight with your spouse or your child, and you've gotten angry with the dog, you would understand. Editors are human. We don't go through and, like, read the story and then reject it, which is good. We, you know, I will go through and read and then give my thoughts on it, and then we meet. and talk about which ones we want to buy. But if I read three stories in a row and I hate them all, I realize then that problem there is with me, not with the stories or any of the authors, and I have to step away. Which is sad if I have the meeting looming about Slush, but I clearly am not in the right frame of mind to comment on the stories. It's not fair. It's not fair to the authors. But sometimes, maybe, you got rejected because the editor had a bad day. I hate to say it, but it could happen. Again, it doesn't happen at Escape Pod because we have several layers, but just when reading the Slush, personally, I look at it and I'm like, I need to step back because I am hating everything now, apparently. Someone said something in chat a little while back. Sorry. Okay, yeah, Kit says, I got contacted by the person who rejected me, and then they said they wanted to publish my story in their personal anthology for free. Please tell me you said no. Always get paid. Sometimes people don't have a lot of money, but if you want to put out an anthology, you want to do the job of an editor, you need to do the job of an editor and pay people. Pay your authors. If you wouldn't, if you know if you're going to print on demand something that you have to pay for the books, you should know you should pay for the content in the books. So don't give away your writing for free. Donate it for charity or get paid. One of my rejections this year was because I submitted it to a podcast, and as the editor pointed out, the story wouldn't work well for audio. I didn't even think about that until they pointed that out. Yes, we have had to do that. Sometimes stories are beautifully lyrical, but they're also slow. And we know that people need a faster punch with audio. Stories like Sarah Gailey's Stet and... I guess Blue's story from Twitter. What was that title? I talked about this last week and I still don't remember the title. It's the Hugo-nominated story that was basically text messages, but it was published on Twitter, self-published. I think that could work with a little bit of audio tweaking. But it's closer to audio drama at that point because it's just dialogue or text messaging. But yeah, that's one thing we have to keep in mind, which is whether the books or the stories are good for audio or not. And that's another time that we really, really hate rejecting things, because on its own, the story is awesome. But considering the medium, it's not right. So it's not great. Premi says, writing isn't about who you know, but who you know in publishing can help and often does, and that can't be denied. Yeah, oh yeah, we're talking about networking. Yeah, it's absolutely true. Half the time, editors are thinking, you know, if they have a project, they think, who would be good for this? This is why only agented authors get IP work, because they want to know what existing authors in whose agency likes what product. That made sense in my head. But basically, the Star Wars editor wants to know what writers that are established like Star Wars. And then, you know, once she gets to know them, she wonders, okay, who should I pick for this book? That kind of thing. And they can't do that with unagented stuff. It's just too much. I know I talk about how sensitive I am with it when it comes to reviews and stuff. But when it comes to edits, I can take a lot, and that's because I got my start writing RPGs. RPG producers, at least 20 years ago, were not the most responsible people in the world. And my editor or producer would get high and then edit my stuff, and the comments would get meaner and more creative as he got higher. So I could tell at what level of, it's not intoxication, is there a word for it? How much he'd smoked as the comments went on. And so when it comes to actually getting comments on my work, I may get irritated at something, but I'm not going to get hurt because I've had a high RPG designer yell at me before. So, fun. Christian writing, I want to add here as a slush reader that, like, as long as you don't do something absolutely egregious, stalk an editor, name a murdered character after an editor, insult the slush readers in the cover letter, we are not talking about you writing behind your back. You're writing it behind your back. So please don't think, oh God, this story is so bad, they're laughing at me and they'll never read anything I write again, because that's simply not true. That is very, very accurate, what Christian writing's just said. For one thing, there's the volume. We go through a lot of stories. And a lot of times it's, you look at the story, and on the slush level, it's look at the story and see if you should pass it up to the assistant editor. And then, I don't know how much y'all pay attention. If it was me, I probably wouldn't pay attention, I'm just going to be honest. But how if you pay attention on how many books, how many stories that you've passed up get actually purchased. But for me, it would just leave my mind. It'd be like, okay, this is in someone else's hands, next story. So yeah, unless you do something absolutely terrible, or just like, there was a series of vignettes that weren't even like vignettes. It was baffling. Yeah, I peeked into slush when our before Preemie joined and after Ben took a break, and I was trying to read this 2-page. Thing of 3 vignettes that were not connected at all, and I'm like, what? This is why the submission guidelines are so important. It's that's like an automatic rejection, because you didn't even send me a story. And even in that case, I don't know who sent that. I didn't pay attention. It's anonymized to begin with, and you know, I believe their name was used in the form rejection I sent, but it wasn't like, the name did not register. I'm bad with names. Yeah. I've had people introduce themselves to me at cons who I've bought from. Luckily, when they tell me the name of their story, I do remember. So, my memory's not that bad. But, yeah. Anyway, I am going to end the podcast here for the feed. We're going to hang out a little bit longer in BarCon. If you ever want to hang out and just chat about stuff with me in the chat, we are streaming 3 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday, Thursday, on twitch.tv/mightymer. The website is merverse.com, and you can support the Patreon to hear the rest of the BarCon chat. patreon.com/mightymer, where you can also get access to our Discord, which is a fantastic community y'all have built. I'm just so honored that I'm just so happy with the way the Discord's gone. It's just so friendly. And you get access to all of the archives, which are finally updated. And you get a couple other things too, depending on the level. So check out patreon.com/mightymer for more information. I think that's all I have to say. I'm going to be posting on Mastodon a little bit more once Mastodon works out its, oh God, we have an influx of users panic. And I think that's Mer herself, but I'm still learning Mastodon. So we'll see. And I have a newsletter, but you can find out all about that at merverse.com. So check me out there. And I'll see you hopefully Thursday, 3 p.m., or I'll see you the next time an episode goes in the feed. And until then, you should be writing. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. I should be writing. I should be working on my craft. I should be writing. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting
watching Doctor Who.